This meeting's in order, by the way. Official for the record now. House File 3492, the description is incorrect. It should be saying a bill for an act relating to education, establishing a computer science education advancement program, authorizing rulemaking, appropriating money. So there's another bill that got listed there in its place. Just in case somebody is using the agenda, which, you know, we have some guests in the audience, and maybe you looked at the agenda and wondering what that might be about, because it didn't seem to make sense when we hear the bill. So understand that that is corrected now. Appreciate it. Other than that, our first order of business is to approve the minutes from Tuesday, February 20th. Representative Lee, if you have had a moment to take a look at those minutes, would you please move approval?
I move to approve the minutes from February 20th.
Thank you. And any discussion of the minutes from February 20th? Great. Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. Great. So our first bill up is from Representative Baker, House File 1242. And if you want to move forward and set yourself up. And if you...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Your testifiers are all set to go?
Yes.
Excellent. All right.
And thank you, Madam Chair and members. Before I forget, too, I do have an amendment. I think that was introduced as well, just to update the date. So I want to make sure we get this as amended.
All right. Well, we will first get the bill before us. Representative Baker, I believe you're a co-author on this amendment, so would you like to move this... or? If you're a co-author on the bill, would you like to move the bill before us, House File 1242?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Baker. And I understand then, Representative Baker, that you'd like to move the amendment and adopt the amendment so the bill's in the order that you would like to present it to the committee. All right. So then, again, I will turn to Representative Baker. We have the amendment, which is coded A1. And Representative Baker, would you... At some point, I'm going to get Baker and Baker.
Backer's in there.
So far, I think I'm okay. Representative Bakeberg, would you please move the A1 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. My understanding, this is just to get the bill in the order that the representative would like it to be presented. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the A1 amendment is adopted. All right. So your bill is before you in the order that's before us in the order that you would like it. Representative Baker, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. Representative Dave Baker from the Candiaway County area. And it's been a big dream of mine to get it in front of your committee, Madam Chair. So thank you for allowing us to happen and your CA and the members here. I want to have a conversation about flexible learning in schools around Minnesota. I have had the opportunity to live in West Central Minnesota, where we actually have three school districts around me, and I have a little piece of it in my county that has really enjoyed the ability to have some flexible learning. Each time I talk to their superintendents, I find more and more that there's some uniquenesses to the, again, in this case, a five-day school week or a four-day school week. Others use different flexibility for different things. I'm excited about this, and I think that we need to bring this to a larger scale. If others think this is right for them, this bill simply just brings it to the local school boards for the decision and the process that it takes to consider this for their school district. So, I have seen test scores, I've seen parents' reactions, I've seen students over my 10 years that I've been here in the state. I first got involved when I was helping one of the schools reapply for their three-year application, and they were very concerned about losing that. So that's where I learned deeply about this about 8 years ago. Today, Madam Chair, I'd like to bring up Gina Lilleberg, who will be our first testifier, and then Pat Walsh, and then we also have somebody online. I just want to say that I'm looking forward to some great conversations today. This is a... idea that is not new. The school districts in my area have been doing it for a number of years, and it's well piloted. Come on up. Yep. And I think that what we can do is just listen to the professionals and hear others, and I'm just really, again, grateful to have this conversation. So thank you for that, and I'll set this stuff aside. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you for that introduction, and Ms. Lilleberg, Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes.
And proceed.
Yes, thank you, committee. My name is Gina Lilleberg, and I'm the chair of the Atwater Cosmos Grove City School District. I'm also a parent of four students who have gone through ACGC under a flexible learning year. ACGC was a school district in statutory operating debt when I was elected to the school board in 2008. We made the decision to move to a flexible learning year in 2010-2011 was our first year. We made that decision by, I'll be honest, we had no choice but to look at ways to cut costs. And as we looked at other schools around the country who had embraced this four-day school week plan, we found some in Arizona, Utah, and Colorado who have been on a four-day school week since the oil embargo of the 1970s. While they originally moved to that model, cost savings is not what kept them there. And as they talked about those intangibles, those are some of the same things that we have seen manifested in our school district. So I would like to highlight what we did to work with our local community to address their concerns, but also to ensure now that they're solidly behind it, how do we revisit that conversation with them on a regular basis. I also have recently finished my term on the Minnesota School Board Association as a director for Southwest Minnesota, and we take very seriously at the School Board Association training our local school districts to get that community feedback to make sure that we are embracing the vision and voice of our local community. In the four-day school week, we survey our stakeholders on a regular basis. That includes not only our parents, students, and staff, but our community as well. We revisit our strategic plan on a regular basis, and that's at least in every five-year process. Four-day is now part of ACGC's identity. And it is something that I've had parents tell me that if you take this away from us, we will riot in your front yard. We use our Mondays in a number of different ways. We offer credit recovery. We offer professional development, 9 full days of staff development throughout the school year, where we're not only able to do it within our own district, but to, because other four-day school weeks are so closely in proximity, we offer that in collaboration with them. I had the privilege to attend one of those professional development days in January, and I was thoroughly impressed with the caliber of speakers that they brought in and the breakout sessions that our staff was allowed to attend. It was on par with some of the trainings I've received as a school board member on a national and state level. It was very impressive, and I'm just thrilled to be able to offer that to our staff and local districts around us. I would be happy to answer any questions you guys may have. Like I said, we've been doing this for a long time, and I'm just thoroughly impressed with the results and the satisfaction that our community has with a four-day school week.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I think if you can stay on hand,
yeah.
We'll go through the other testifiers and public testifiers and then return, and I think members will have questions, take notes, and thank you.
Thank you, Chair Pryor.
All right, and I believe Mr. Walsh, Superintendent Walsh, you're up next.
My name is Patrick Walsh. I'm the superintendent at Belgrade Bruton El Rosa School District. It's in southwest Stearns County, Tandy, Ojai County, and Pope County. We border all three of them. Our district is 350 square miles. We have some students that are basically on a bus for an hour and a half to get to school. So we have this remote aspect of our district that you need to be aware of. The four-day week began at BBE School District in 2011. I was the principal in Hutchinson at the time, but I am familiar with the schools around this area that it began it. Many of our parents now were students in a four-day week, and our current senior class, they've never actually went to a traditional five-day week schedule, never. Initially, I talked to the superintendent, Matt Bullard. He's out in California now, about his initial application in 2010. And these were the reasons why BBE went to the four-day week. They wanted to maintain a vibrant high school, and they were in deep cuts through the 2000s. They needed to save some money. They wanted to improve their student attendance, and they thought it was an avenue to increase some of the stakeholder satisfaction. A culture of our district is in the next part, in the core values. You can go to the back.
Sorry.
Oh, you're going the wrong direction.
I don't know. I was just clicking. Sorry.
Okay.
It's not my presentation.
So anyway, where we were at, I was just going to say it's built into the culture of our school district, and we literally have put it into our core values when it comes to flexible and personalized learning. When it comes to a B through A district, when I say a B through A district, we have 150 kids at least in our school every day, 12 months a year, who are below the age of five. So the idea that we're a four-day week is not exactly accurate. We have a daycare where kids are there, you know, 5 days a week all year long. We have 12 infants that are in a room 25 feet from my office. So it's like we have, I think it's 28 toddlers between 16 months and 30 months. So it's a community service district. We are totally part of the fabric of everything we do in our school district. Some unintended benefits of the four-day week. Where are we now? Right there. These are current assessment of results. The coursework, we've been able to maintain that at the high school. Our cost savings, quite honestly, is right where the national average when they've studied it, it's about 5% of your budget. And you think of 5% of your budget over 14 years, that's about $3 million. That's SOD territory. So, I mean, it's managed for us to save a district financially. Improved student attendance. I have found no connection to that in our district. I don't think our attendance has improved. I'm just being honest. It was one of the original goals, and it hasn't proven to fruition. And nationally, that's true, too. Stakeholder satisfaction, 95% or more of our people are behind it. We have businesses in our community that don't have if we're not in school, they're not. The bakery's not open. It's crazy. You know, it's a culture. Our parents, I think the pandemic has actually cemented it, because now these flexible learning ideas, it's like people are used to having jobs where they can structure their day around their kids' schedules. And quite honestly, if we were to change it, it would be devastating for our school district. We'd lose teachers. We would lose students. 11 years ago, we were a negative 120 open enrollment district, and now we are more like negative 36 or something like that. If you go out to, you know, Representative Baker's territory, just right south of us, we've got, our school district goes within 2 miles of New London Spicer. And so for a kid who's 4 and a half in a family with a 4 and a half year old, they have to make a decision to, you know, bus their kid all the way over to Bruton, which is probably 20 miles, or go 2 miles to New London Spicer. It's hard to win that debate. So again, 12, 13 years ago, we were a negative 120. We're a negative 38 now. The four-day week or the flexible learning year has a lot to do with that. I did provide you some of the research. K12dive.com just had an article last Friday, so that's there. And I'm here to field any questions that you have as well. I won't burden you with the research, but you can read that on your own.
Thank you for your presentation. And I believe our next testifier is on remote, and it's Joe Baumgarten, Principal Researcher, American Institute for Research. And if you can hear us, please unmute, identify yourself for the record, and proceed.
Hi, Education Policy Committee. My name is Joel Baumgarten. I'm the superintendent at Buffalo Lake Hector Stewart. I'm brand new this year. And we have a different approach to this that Pat and some others have, and that's we're looking into this possibility. We currently have a 5-day school week, but it's very intriguing looking at this as a possibility for our small school out in rural Minnesota. We think we can benefit from it. And so we have brought it up to our school board and to our staff, and there's a real interest. Obviously, we would need to go to the community. We would need to, you know, have local control. We would need to do some community meetings, some surveys and things like that in order to get approval. But I think once people would get to this point of a 4-day week, we would definitely have approval from most people, as Pat just alluded to in his district. Some of the things that are intriguing, I just made a quick list for you. You know, the teacher PD days with the READ Act coming up next year in our 5-day calendar, we have 13 days set aside in order to try to get all of the hours done for our letters training. We could have 1 day per month or so set aside. That would be an automatic. That'd be a great thing for us. The credit recovery idea, bringing that up, students who are failing or need to make up some things, you could bring those kids in during those days. It's an automatic snow makeup day. Last year we had a whole bunch of snow makeup days and virtual days. And virtual days, you know, you can get some stuff out of them, but they aren't the same as being in person. And you can set aside once a month or so during the wintertime those makeup days. We would probably encourage people, especially staff, to miss less time due to appointments. Make those appointments on Mondays. College visits for students could happen during that time, and all of the other different things. We also would look into the possibility, being close to ACGC and McRae and some of these BBE, maybe doing some partnerships during those days that we would have off, you know, for things like clubs and special learning assignments and project-based learning, where you could do some upper level learning during that time. We'd look into that. We're also very heavy into the Ag FFA CTE programs, in which those could be huge opportunities for our older students to get out in the community and work with businesses like Loftness and Formafeed and some of the, you know, different groups in our area. Many of our kids in high school are working jobs anyway, and they could possibly get some credit for that as well and make connections with our community. We believe that the parents and families many times will adjust schedules. Some people would go to 4-10s, for example, in order to adjust their schedule. That happens all the time. I honestly believe that grandpas and grandmas and other family members would take advantage of this. They'd go hunting and fishing and doing the stuff that in rural Minnesota is really important to our families. We also, as Pat said, we want to attract staff and students. We're in the same situation in which we have staff come here for a year or two, and then they go to bigger districts to get paid more. Also, students who go to a bigger school for more opportunities, at least that's what they think. And so I think that would be an opportunity to allure those people over to our district. We would be able to, much like Pat stated, to provide affordable daycare. We are creating an early childhood center that's in the process right now. We also, for food purposes, would do some food pack programs and pretty much put some extra food into those as needed for those people that need that. The bus time is a big deal. 20% less time on the bus, which is wasted time for students, is really important. And adding, you know, 4 to 5 hours a week to a student's current time, I think you could make up for all of that educational time needed. Of course, we would save money on bus and utilities and things like that, but that's not our number one reason to look into this. We really believe that this could be a good thing for Buffalo Lake Hector Stewart Schools. Again, we are currently on the 5-day plan, but in the near future, we are going to research this if we're allowed, and I thank you for listening. And if you have any questions, let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I think what we'll do is move to the public testimony, and so we'll have you move to the side if you're, but stay close by, we appreciate. And first up, we have Mr. Dosh Uni from the Department of Education, and then on standby, Caitlin Snyder from Education Ministry.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and appreciate the opportunity here to provide some comments on this proposal around 4-day week Really appreciate the opportunity to connect with Representative Baker. He reached out to the department to kind of hear what our thoughts and possible concerns were on the bill, and really do appreciate that outreach and a really productive conversation on shared goals around supporting innovation in our districts and charters and really what works well for them. I will just say from the outset, MDE has kind of gone through a journey in the last 8 to 10 years around looking at what districts are capable of and what they're able to do for their local communities. We have a shifting mindset in this space around flexible learning years. And in part, some of that is in light of what districts were able to accomplish during the pandemic. I think they really showed us what they were able to do to come through for their students. And one prime example is that they showed that they could deliver online learning for their students. And one of the first things we did out of the gate was push for making all districts and charters approved online learning providers for their enrolled students, because we recognized that they had the capacity there. We also know that the U of M did a study on the effects of four-day weeks, and we know that many can be implemented without a negative impact and supporting the academic trajectory that districts are on in some circumstances. Not in all, but in some, right? And that goes to representing what's good for local communities. And I think we've heard from some of the testifiers today the importance of meeting what local community needs, and getting community buy-in is there. But I think it should come as no surprise for any on the committee that when there are proposals about removing MDE completely or wholly from a process, it does give us pause. And I think there are legitimate concerns we have about that process, and we want to approach this proposal and the next discussions in kind of a measured collaborative, through a measured collaborative lens. Our approval process that we have right now does require a consideration and a conversation around a range of issues and impacts that come from that. And the goal is to maintain a consistent statewide expectation around some of these services and access to resources that we provide for our students and families and educators. Just a few examples are access to meals on non-instructional days, access for school care or school age-based care, and then how do families find child care on that extra day, and what type of pressures does that put for the local community? Students who receive special education services, their access to FAPE, especially on those non-instructional days, what impact may those longer school days have on students who do have some of those pressures, or maybe are neurodivergent and those longer days may have some extra impacts on them? And then what are the economic impacts on non-salaried workers who depend on those hourly set schedules? Those are just a few of the considerations that we have in our approval process that we want to make sure are continue to be part of the process and why we have that system set up. But I just do want to say, like, as I mentioned, we do have a shifting mindset. In our conversation with Representative Baker, we did make quite clear that we're very open to continuing this conversation through the collaborative lens, and to see what we can do to make sure that more communities are able to have models that fit their needs, but based on having something that has a consistent statewide expectation for those protections that I mentioned. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. And Ms. Knight, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder. I am a lobbyist with Education Minnesota. Forgive me, I think it was Superintendent Walsh earlier said that there'd be riots in the streets if they stopped offering four-day school weeks. And I spoke with a member earlier today in Lake Superior, and he said something very similar, so I am not here to testify against four-day school weeks, to be very clear. Done. In the move, in the bill where we're moving away from an MDE approval process, there are a couple of considerations largely outlined by Mr. Uni that I'd like the committee to think about, like nutritional access for our food insecure kids on days where school's not in session, access for special education students, especially kids with higher needs that might not be able to access childcare in the same way. We also argue that a change like this should be something that should be locally negotiated. If we're changing, especially for the non-salaried members of our school staff, if we were changing from a four-day school week to a five-day school week, that's going to lead in a loss of employment for our nutritional staff and our school bus driver. So having a conversation face-to-face is something that we would support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. All right. We open it now to member discussion. And I see Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to say that I live in the Atwater Cosmos Grove City School District. And so I'm well acquainted with the four-day school week that they have there and the excellent job that is done. The students perform very well on our standardized test scores. There has not been any suffering. A loss of learning or anything like that. So I just want to speak highly for the way they are doing things in ACGC and urge support for Representative Baker's bill.
Thank you. Representative Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. In terms of the, and maybe this was answered, so I apologize, but will teachers still be compensated for kind of at the same level they are with a five-day work week going down to a four?
Madam Chair, that's a great question. I think I know what it is, and I want to get confirmation from a superintendent. Nothing changes with the teacher contracts, their pay. I think the same expectations are there. And I think, again, Mr. Walsh could maybe address to this some of the early concerns or the initial concerns, which are valid, for the Education Minnesota. And so I think it, go ahead and have a chair, and then just maybe you can answer that question.
As part of the initial.
Would you please identify yourself again?
Oh, Patrick Walsh, BBE superintendent.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. As part of the initial plan, we had to keep our old contract. So if you look at our contract, it's still 182 school days in the year. The flexible learning year is driven by a MOU. So we have to re-sign that with our teachers every year. Our contract has not changed at all. The compensation is the same as every other district. We just have to derive the new language around the flexible learning year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that's the way it is now. What happens once the contract runs out? What is, in terms of the language in this bill, what would prevent, at some point in time, the school districts not paying their teachers what they've been paying them for a five-day school week? Is there a guarantee that they will continue to make the same salary once those contracts you're speaking of are no longer active?
Yeah, we've negotiated 7 contracts for 14 years under this arrangement. So there's nothing, there's no poison pill for the four-day learning week.
And Representative Baker, if you could also address this, the way the bill's written, do you see it speaking to secret contracts and that 4 days equals 5 days in terms of?
Madam Chair, members, here's what I've assured MDE is that if we need to adjust this and have some comfort language in here to make sure those kind of things are handled, we can do that. I just know that with my conversations with our current administrators, they are assuring me the memos of understanding, the contracts have gone well in our areas. The last thing we want to do is to take anything away from a teacher. We are doing this in largely because teachers are really liking this model. Some districts have 5, 6, 7 school buildings, and maybe not all of them have the flexible learning, because maybe they do it a little differently with the ALS school or something, so those are just different. But again, I'm very flexible to modifying this how we can all kind of like, let's walk before we run. I know that there's school districts doing it very successfully, and they did it on their own without sort of us hovering over what they're going to do and how they're going to approach the community. I'm hoping we can keep this very simple, like the bill is drafted, but I'm committing my efforts to the committee, to the chairs, to make sure that we walk through this how you feel comfortable doing this to allow more schools to be able to apply. Right now, schools can't apply for this anymore, and that's what we want to change.
I do want to add that we had 1,456.
Mr. Walsh, We have to make sure that when someone's speaking that, you know, that the record is official about who made the statements. And so, and then also that we go through the chair to be recognized before speaking. So that's the habits here and how we do it. So, Mr. Walsh.
It should be noted that we had 1,456 hours that were part of the contract before, and they are maintained in the current contract.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. And do you have another, maybe another comment from?
Do you have any other comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I just if you can just sit down and identify yourself again, that would be. And we are trying to have this discussion, and since you're here, which. We appreciate your coming and being part of this discussion and being able to hear from folks directly really benefits us. So if you identify yourself again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. My name is Gina Lilleberg, ACGC Schools. Our contract is a little bit different in that the first one we did after we went to the four-day school week did have a memorandum of understanding. After that, we renegotiated contract language, and that was done through the negotiation process, the negotiation committee, and ratified by our teacher union.
Did you, and I, if I can ask a question just real quickly, how long has your school district been using this model?
Yep, we've been using this model since the 2010-2011 school year.
Thank you. All right, Representative Weiss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a question out of pure self-interest. As mother, my kids are currently at the age where like when they have extra time off, we can leave them home alone. They're safe, but they definitely just sit on devices all day. So it's not like very enriching for them. And I know one of the things that Mr. Uni said was a consideration was like that impact on childcare on that extra day. And so I'm curious if we were to move to this model, kind of what would that process analysis look like, and how would things like the childcare impact be taken into account?
Ms. Lilleberg, it looks like you have an answer.
Yeah, well, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Feist, I had four children go through the four-day school week model. For a large majority of that, I was able to be a stay-at-home mom with them. And so, ironically, we did chore jar on Mondays, and then we did rewards. And but once they were old enough to be home alone and I returned to the workforce, they would similarly have a reward and benefit system. And so they earned their screen time. And then they also earned bigger rewards, whether that be an outing or, you know, car privileges. And so every parent gets to structure it a little bit different for them, and we get to be creative. I was fortunate in that my mother-in-law was a school teacher, and so they loved going over and spending Mondays with Grandma. And all of my kids are great bakers because of that.
And Mr. Walsh, Superintendent Walsh, did you say that your one of your elementary schools has an on-site child care?
Yeah, inside. Yeah, we have 200 students on a Monday, but 130 every day, all year long. So.
And follow up representatives.
And do people then pay for that?
They
Mr.
do.
Mr. Walsh, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have another question, Representative?
I just wanted to make another comment. If it's okay. Yeah, I feel like my household, I feel like we wouldn't be capable of that. Like, it's not the skill set we bring to parenting. And I think we're on, like, one end of the spectrum of that not having that skill set, and that we're both, like, really busy. And then I think there are a lot of people who just don't have the bandwidth because they're working multiple jobs, and they don't necessarily have the education and the structure to their home. So that's just kind of where my concern is. It sounds like some households can make it work. I would struggle.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. A quick question about other contracts. How has this impacted your hourly employees' contracts?
And who, Mr. Walsh?
Right now we have 34 paraprofessionals, and we have like 8 bus drivers and 8 cooks. So if we're talking about them, I would say if this is your primary job, it is difficult to find employees. Because to be honest with you, when you're saving money off somebody's back. And for us, like it's instead of a 32-hour a week job in a paraprofessional for 36 weeks, it's a 28-hour a week job for 36 weeks. So those, theoretically, those folks are losing 140
44 hours a year, and they probably average a wage of $16 to $18 an hour. When we're looking for those employees, I don't think money is the factor of why they're working for us in the first place, because it would be hard to support a family on the money that you make as a paraprofessional.
I'll follow up, Representative Hill.
No, I appreciate that, and I think that's part of what I'm getting at. Also, kind of recognizing I was the son of a paraprofessional, and, the challenge around her being able to access health benefits in a school district setting, working in that role. Can you talk a little bit about if any of your hourly employees are eligible for health benefits?
Mr. Walsh, please.
Yes, we have half of our non-union employees take our health insurance. Quite honestly, half the people, having health insurance benefits are good. The other half wish we weren't contributing to health benefits at all and we're just paying them more. It's a really tough dynamic there, because for this half, health insurance is the most important thing, and for this, it's absolutely the last thing that they want. They just want more money.
And has one more follow-up, and thank you for dealing with the rapid fire here. Has it been difficult to find employees? Can you talk a little bit about that? Are you currently looking at vacancies? Is it an ongoing issue, et cetera?
Mr. Walsh.
Paraprofessionals and non-union people, yes, it is very hard. It seems like no matter what we do with a contract, private sector can add dollars to their wages a lot quicker than we can, because we have a negotiated contract. It is a very big challenge.
Thank you. I have Mr. Big, Representative Bakeberg next, and we'll come back to you after.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you, Representative Baker. I won't screw up my own name, but I really appreciate this, and the reason I signed on to the bill is I love the idea of allowing and empowering our local school districts. Yesterday, we heard a bill, and frankly heard the frustration of hearing no from the department. I was at an admin meeting this morning for my school district, and we were talking about just different innovative programs that we're trying to do, and that was the sentiment that was echoed this morning, just the frustration of, can we do this? Will we be approved? So I love the idea of empowering local districts. Rep. Baker, that's why I was on this. And as I was hearing Mr. Uni, and those are valid points that he brought up about meals, about childcare, about special ed services, about the economic impact on our hourly workers. And as he was talking, I flashed back to during the pandemic when our bus drivers were delivering meals to bus stops so that kids got food. And what probably my highlight professionally certainly wasn't the pandemic, but it was the Sunday that we met and we planned. And we would do things differently today knowing what we know, but we had a group of people in a room. We rolled up our sleeves once we found out that we weren't going to be back in school, and we just figured it out. And that's what these guys have done. They, in their local districts, they've gotten feedback, and I understand the concerns about childcare and different styles of parenting, but that comes through local communities. And I would guess that you've had an ongoing feedback process with all stakeholders. That's what school districts do. So thank you for that. But one of the things that we were talking about is professional development for the READ Act. And could you guys talk about that Monday? Because, whether it's a Friday or a Monday, could you talk about how you're utilizing that time? Because the constant roadblock that we run into with innovation within school districts is time. It's time for professional development. It's time for our teachers to take a breath and just think. So could you talk about how you're utilizing that time for professional development? And then is that an additional stipend on top of the current contract? Or just kind of talk through some of that.
If I may. Thank you, Chair Pryor.
Ms. Littlebrook.
Yeah, so member school board member Lilleberg from ACGC. In our contract, the days of professional development are built in to their hours. That's part of the negotiated contract that is renewed every 2 years, and that language is hashed out at the local level. Our professional development, that was one of the things that really was breaking my heart from SOD, was that was one of the cuts that we made. And you could see it in how the teachers approach their job professionally and their morale. But by making this investment in them one Monday a month, where they're getting those conversations with their peers and that opportunity to dig deep, whether that be into the data as to how they can support their students better and who needs more, who is a leader in the classroom and can maybe do something a little bit different. We analyze that on a regular basis, and I love those conversations because it used to be about, you know, what can we afford right now? As to now, it's we're dialing it down to the student level and getting each kid where they are and getting them what they need. So in terms of letters training, we're doing it, you know, we look at that and we're like, that's kind of an expensive step for every district to take. And so if we don't qualify for the grant money that's available for those trainings, we're looking at a train-the-trainer model where we're sending some of our high-flying staff, those that want to be innovative and leaders in that material, sending them to the trainings, and then they're coming back and bringing their cohort along with them.
And I believe we have a short question from Representative Erdahl, and then I will go to Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in addition to what I said before, because of questions regarding the teachers, the staff and teachers of ACGC are very happy with the program. My wife actually worked in it for a time, mm-hmm. and I never hear any derogatory comments about four-day weeks from teachers. Now, what they do say to me over in ACGC is, if you really want to help us, do something about our pensions, but that's another topic.
Another committee. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to thank you, Representative Baker, for bringing this forward, and thank folks for coming all the way down here to testify. And I can tell your passion for your schools and your students by your presentation and the innovative ways that you've tried to meet their needs. And I appreciate that because I think we're all in this together. And I don't mean that facetiously. I work as a para or an interim and a substitute teacher, so I get it. I think I also understand, too, after talking to our amazing nonpartisan staff, that this was put in place and then quickly changed after to not no longer allow new districts to come in to do it. So that was something that was a learning for me because I did not have that knowledge base. We also know that you collected some great data, and there are concerns. I have concerns that our school year is not long enough compared to other first world countries that we're competing with around the country. And I also work with kids that are neurodiverse, that a really longer school day can be tough. But you probably know your population better than I do. I know in some of my districts that would never work. In fact, during COVID, having pod models for our neurodiverse kids actually worked better because they have that shorter, more compressed time. But I do also have some of the same concerns going to the four-day model just because of the hourly workers and that, you know, we're desperate for daycare, especially in greater Minnesota. But that's not what we're talking about here today, right? It's something that we need to consider moving to that, and sometimes having a partner in those considerations can help folks hear each other or think about other things they might have not have thought of to ask or do before. There's stakeholders that I'm like, oh man, I didn't think about talking to folks about this. What we learned yesterday too was there's a lot of misunderstanding sometimes about whether or not a district can do something, and they can. They're kind of self-censoring themselves from doing it because they're worried about fallout, or they're just worried about, like, will somebody say no? In this case, the barrier is the fact that the MDE has said no more schools. So what I would like to ask you and Representative Baker, and maybe we can take this offline, would that be something that would be that first step to look at? Because I think because we are as a legislature and tasked the administration and per constitutional requirement at our state supposed to put together a form of public education for everyone. So there's some requirements in there, especially with federal requirements of special education as well. That if that first step would be, okay, let's think about opening this up to other districts to apply, what that look like. I have real heartburn of just like, we're only gonna let the local districts do it. Because while you guys were amazing and did innovative, great things, and I have to say thank you for having a childcare center in your schools, that's incredible. That's not always gonna be the case everywhere. So we also need to be good stewards and make sure all kids are getting what they need to learn. So maybe that's something that can be part of that conversation. Sorry, that was a very long comment with not quite a question, but maybe a question because I saw Representative Baker pull that microphone.
Yeah, and Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, thank you. And again, Chair Yoakim, I agree with everything you said about let's be careful with this. I think, again, you have recognized these school districts and six or seven others in the state have been very successful with it. If it wasn't, they would go back to the five-day model. I think that would be clearly seen. Actually, a number of years ago, one school did that. They tried it, and it didn't work for them, and they went back. North Branch tried that. What I'm suggesting is it shouldn't just be the decision of the Commissioner of Education. It should be allowed for that. Should we add some components to this to make sure there's a few boxes to check, to make sure you're asking local stakeholders, like has been mentioned, is there maybe do a 10 or 20 school districts a year that may be approved, and there's another, then you wait and see. I just know that we need more than what we have as an option, because this is not a model that will work for everybody. It is clearly not. I think I've heard from northern Minnesota, a school way up in northern Minnesota, have had this way up north. A mom told me last week when she was down here on another issue, they have kept some of the small schools open only because of the four-day model, because teachers love it and they have no teacher shortages. Now imagine that. I think every teacher Mr. Walsh has is a licensed teacher. Is that what you told me earlier? That's not every school district has that. So teachers are gravitating towards this. They don't make the most money, but it's about a quality of life. And I think that's part of the issue, but I am very open to helping write amendments or changes and this kind of thing. I'm very open to not letting this just die for a year so we don't have more time to kind of do more. I'd love to sit down and talk with you more with others, Representative Yoakim, for whatever this looks like as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And yes, Representative.
I just want to make sure for the public record that all teachers have to be licensed to be in a school. I want to get that out there.
Thank you.
Fully licensed.
Yeah.
Thank you. Fully licensed. Thank you.
And then I just also want to say, like, one of the concerns in wanting to keep MDE involved is also that access to education for districts, if it wasn't working for a parent and there's not another school district within 200 miles, what then? Or I do really have big concerns for our kiddos with special needs as well. But like you said, sometimes you have to walk before you run, and I like, you know, if we are going to change this and open it up for more people, that I personally would like to still see the Department of Education involved. But that's just my two cents. Thanks.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Baker, Backer, Bakeberg, all of the above, you're called many. No, Representative Baker, thank you for this. Thank you to your guests for coming down. Very interesting, and I love it. I love it because it involves flexible learning. I love it because it involves innovation. I love it because it involves local control, and you don't shove it down people's throats. You get your community input, your staff, teachers, administrators, everybody, and you do what works best for your community and your students and staff, which is not necessarily the same as for my community and students and staff in my schools. And so I just like that, and I thank you for this. And I think as a state, we need to start focusing on where at all possible to stop micromanaging input for our schools, but hold schools accountable for the output. Because when we stop micromanaging input, we're going to get surprises and find out, wow, this is really working well. We could multiply this throughout the state. But if we constantly micromanage, everybody's got to do it the same, which doesn't work for various communities, then we end up with kind of mediocrity. So thank you for this. I think it's a great bill, and I hope it goes forward.
And as a reminder to the committee, we are playing this bill over. Appreciate the hearing today. And Representative Baker, if you can give us a few closing words, we'll move on to our next agenda items.
And thank you for the extra time, Madam Chair and others. This is a lot to kind of absorb. Again, this is a choice for local districts to see if this is right for them or not. We all have election certificates as well, just like our local school districts do, our school board members. And if we don't get it right, we hear about it. And I think that's what's good about this. It's not dictated by the state. It's not all or nothing. We're not a one-size-fits-all. I love this idea of allowing school districts to have this conversation. If they want to do it, they should apply to make sure they're checking some of these things like they have in the past. It has gotten them to do it better, smarter. I think they've listened to the communities, like others have mentioned, very well, so that they don't have it's a 90% approval. We think this is a good idea. So I really hope that we, as state legislators, allow this to happen. Again, I'm committed, Madam Chair, to work with MDE about some of their ideas and concerns, and I was really encouraged to hear that their ideas are opening to this concept as well. I think they are open to this. I think they're genuine when they say that. And I hope that we can continue this, and I'm grateful that after a couple of years I got a hearing in your committee. So thank you for this, and I look forward to discussing this with anybody. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Baker, for joining us. Thank you very much for joining us here in person and for our remote testimony, too. Really appreciate being able to hear from the superintendent on that. All right, and with that, we have House File 1242 laid over, or House File 1242 as amended laid over for further consideration. All right, and if we can move into position. We have a presentation from the Department of Education on the Computer Science Working Group, the preliminary reports. And I will emphasize again that it is preliminary, we understand, but this is a good moment to hear something. All right. And I have that it will be... We'll do the introductions. I have Jennifer Dugan from the Department of Education, Director of Academic Standards, Instruction, and Assessment. You can introduce yourself for the committee, and I know that you are getting set up there for your presentation.
Thank you so much. Jennifer Dugan, I'm the director for the Division of Academic Standards, Instruction, and Assessment at the Minnesota Department of Education, and so wanted to give a very current, off-the-press update on where the Computer Science Working Group is. And so, while these are MDE's 10 commitments to equity, the two that I selected are based off of what the working group put in their current draft strategic plan. And that states that the department will partner with other state agencies, local education agencies, nonprofits, industry, and higher education to build capacity, expand access, broaden participation, ensure equitable experiences. And so that's really the foundation and the perspective that this working group's recommendations are coming from. So very quickly, I will go through the timeline of how we got here, and then also briefly go through the recommendations of the working group that are in the draft report. That draft report is on the internet, and I believe you got a PDF of it as well. And then also really quickly, the next steps we'll go through. So House File 2497 created this Computer Science Working Group, and really want to acknowledge the hard work and quick work of the working group, and also thank the legislature for the strong representation across the state that was required for this working group. So the application opened in July, closed in August. We announced the committee in mid-September, and they had their first meeting in October. They met in October, November. They worked furiously in December and early January, and then they met in January to really refine that the working group's recommendations that are on the internet, and were out for public comment from February 1st to February 16th. So in order, this is almost directly from the committee, in order to address the components of the capacity, access, participation, and experience framework and the goals of the working group's plan, the working group determined the following focus areas, which are described in the report, and then that's also the order that I'm going to go through very quickly today. All right. I'm not going to read the next two slides to you. But rather talk through, this puts them on a timeline, puts them in a little bit broader context. So first, thinking about data and reporting, the working group's recommendations have to do really with making sure that everyone is reporting in Common Course Catalog, the computer science enrollment, computer science offering, including K-8, which just started reporting or being collected in Common Course Catalog in 2023, and also the reporting aspect, so not just the collection of the data, but also the reporting out. And so that's really important because computer science was added to the STEM report out of Common Course Catalog just in 2023. So this working group really wants to see not just that STEM report include computer science, but really augment it and enhance what is there. And also just on this slide, the KPI is the key performance indicators. And so, again, a lot of the conversations with the working group are not just around collecting those data, but how will we use that data as a state to know that we've made progress. And their hashtag has become from last to first, as you might have seen in the report. So the next category is licensure, and so there's a lot of there's a lot of pieces, and for the sake of time, I'm not going to go through all of those pieces around licensure, but again, really being sure the working group wants to be sure that the staff that are instructing students related to computer science have the current and an up-to-date pedagogy related to computer science across all of the grades, especially for integrating across K-8. Right. And that really leads into the next category, which is professional development. And so all of those pieces that are required in being sure that everyone is up to date, that the working group's recommendations have to do about ensuring that the state is providing those resources and providing that professional development around what everyone needs. And so one piece that I don't want to miss in highlighting that you might see throughout the report is the continuation, depending upon your perspective, of the Computer Science Advisory Committee. So this is the first slide where that's really been brought out in those recommendations, but that group would be throughout all of these, to advise on the implementation as the working group's recommendations come to fruition is kind of their vision of how that advisory committee would continue. And then we've talked a lot already about the local context and being sure that everything is regional and pertinent for the students that are receiving that computer science instruction. And so that's really that regional computer science champion, being sure that specific to a location, a region, that those regional computer science champions know what the region needs and are really addressing those needs rather than just the agency supporting that there's that local context. And then the last grouping is related to the standards and credit equivalency. And again, you'll see the Computer Science Advisory Committee is there again. The creation of the working group's recommendation of creating the K-8 computer science standards, and then also thinking about what that means for increasing the diversity and the opportunities for all students, and especially those that are typically underserved, which again flows into the right. It's all connected. It goes to the PD, to making sure that it's all there, to making sure that licensure is there as well. So there's common themes throughout. And then just trying to bring us home. Related to some next steps. So yesterday was the next to the last working group meeting. And so in that meeting, they really started their synthesizing, digging deep into the public comments and thinking about what that would mean for their revision of the recommendations and the final report. And so those writing groups and writing teams are going to start working probably at night in the next week or so. And then their last meeting is March 12th. And so the goal is that on March 12th, they would have an updated, as a result of that, the working team's work, the working group would have a revised plan to review on March 12th, implement any edits, and then the final report would be available by March 22nd.
Thank you. No, it doesn't seem that we have any questions at this point, and so I think we'll go ahead and do the bill presentation. Representative Lee. And thank you for your presentation and the update on the report. I know that I got it, but I'd like to hear someone explain it. All right, we have House File 3492. Representative Lee is here with the bill, her presenters, and we appreciate that you've been waiting through the beginning of the meeting before you were on with your bill, and appreciate your patience on that.
I think only half of us are presenting, but we want to show the full team.
All right. It is our intention to re-refer this bill to Education Finance Committee and during today's committee hearing. So, Representative Lee, would you please motion House File 3492 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance?
So moved.
Thank you. And I understand you also have a DE2 amendment, which would get the bill in the order that you would like it.
That is my motion.
We will move the DE2 amendment and just to get the bill in the condition that we would want to discuss it. So, all in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. DE2 amendment has been adopted, and we will now hear House File 3492 as amended. All right, Representative Lee, please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair. It's good to be back in front of the committee again talking about computer science. I know I have a lot of guests with me today, and so just in recognition of time, we're going to try to speed through my part really quickly so that my really important guest from Hermantown will be able to present. I also want to thank the department before we continue for their excellent overview just now and the work that they've done quickly putting this together after we adjourned, guiding the working group for the last 6 months or 9 months or so, and then publishing the draft report for public comment so soon so that we're on the right path to correcting our sustained lack of statewide investments in computer science. For those who have been following this issue, Minnesota has ranked last in the nation for access to high school computer science courses for the past 3 years. Fortunately, the tide began turning with the passage of the Computer Science Advancement Act last year, with the support of Chair Joachim and Chair Pryor and all of our Senate partners. So I'm grateful for that, and I know our partners and our students here are as well. This year's bill, House File 3492, seeks to continue this momentum by equipping the department with the necessary resources to execute this comprehensive plan that we just heard. And so as you know, the plan will be final on March 22nd, but given the nature of the legislature, our first bill deadline is way before that. And so really appreciate folks, you know, giving us time to present this on a timeline that makes sense for the legislature and, you know, for the way things work here. While, you know, MD is still finalizing their plan, we know that funding will be crucial, and we have to continue making steps to right this systemic disinvestment. And so I look forward to incorporating any necessary changes to accommodate the specific recommendations that are finalized. Again, to set the stage, currently, less than a third of Minnesota high schools offer at least one computer science course. And in an era where technology permeates every facet of our society, it's imperative that our students are not just consumers of technology, but also creators, innovators, and problem solvers. The kids that I have with me today. Computer science is not just about coding or programming. It's about critical thinking, problem solving, and understanding the digital world around us. Even if none of these amazing individuals become the next Mark Zuckerberg, it is still an worthy investment. These are skills that are necessary in every field, from agriculture to healthcare to the arts. Access to computer science education in Minnesota is currently limited, with stark disparities between different regions and socioeconomic groups. So House File 3492 aims to bridge this gap to ensure that all of our students, whether they're from rural areas or urban centers, have equal opportunities to learn computer science. And we'll now hear from students, from high school students from just outside of Duluth who have traveled down to share with you firsthand about the impact that computer science has had on their lives.
And I think I'll just have you in turn introduce yourself to the committee and proceed. So if you can give your name and then you can begin your presentation.
All right, my name is Mateo Sandoval Luna. I want to start by thanking Madam Chair and the House Education Policy Committee for allowing me to testify. I'm an Eagle Scout, a senior at Hermantown High School, and one of the captains on the Hermantown High School robotics team. This is my eighth year in extracurricular robotics teams. Ethan and I have led teams to Minnesota State Championships 6 times. I believe that it is crucial for every student to have built-in access to computer science education in Minnesota. During my time at Hermantown, nearly all of my computer science education has been self-motivated, whether it was self-taught or in extracurricular activities. The computer classes we did have often looked like a bunch of kids silently moving through online assignments on individual laptops. Despite their best efforts, this is not overly engaging, especially for students like myself who wanted to learn more. I learned about the brand new robotics teams starting in my middle school. I quickly discovered that robotics fulfilled my craving for exploring computer science, as well as being a place in the school where I could fit in. Since I started robotics, I have gained the skills to do incredible things, and not just programming directly. I've learned how to follow systems and talk to businesses professionally about projects. My experience with logical thinking and problem solving allowed me to get a job as an arcade technician. My work on computer science projects in the robotics team is what opened my eyes to what is possible when you put your mind to things. It taught me that I could successfully pursue my current plan of commercial aviation, as well as earning my Eagle Scout rank. And I have learned to automate things that would otherwise take up a lot of my time in my life, such as tracking my spending and managing homework. To say that robotics and computer science skills I have gained have changed my life would be an understatement. I'm incredibly lucky to be able to afford the time and ability to join extracurriculars like this. Many students cannot. I cannot imagine what my life, career path, and even social life would be like without computer science activities. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I urge you to support House File 3492.
Thank you. Again, please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Ethan Stevenson. I'm a senior at Hermantown High School, and I would like to thank Madam Chair and the committee members for allowing me to testify today. My passion for computer science started just as Mateo's did in robotics. Without this extracurricular activity, I don't think I could have ever realized how much I truly love computer science. Whenever I get to solve an everyday problem with an efficient algorithm or get to make a robot move around the field, I know that I'm applying the same skills that I will be utilizing in my dream job of becoming a software engineer. Computer science is not just coding, though. Problem solving, communication skills, and persistence are all key aspects of computer science that I've learned through my interactions with it. I will be pursuing a degree in computer science at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities this fall because of my involvement in robotics. At my high school, there are currently only two computer science classes taught, one of which is taught by an English teacher who is on a provisional license that is expiring at the end of this year. Friends of mine who have taken this class really enjoyed the subjects taught and wish that there are more opportunities available within our school. Due to my years in robotics, these classes were too basic for me, so I had to pursue opportunities outside of my high school to get the level of education that I wanted. That is why I'm currently enrolled in Computer Science 2 at the University of Minnesota Duluth through my post-secondary enrollment options. Many students in my PSEO class have told me that their first interactions with coding have been through these college classes. They wish that they were able to discover how much they liked computer science before these opportunities. I'm very thankful to have had access to these PSEO classes in my school, but many students are too far away from a college and don't have computer science classes in their high school. If I was not engaged in robotics as soon as I was, I don't think I could have learned how much computer science really means to me. I hope that everyone is able to have great experiences, much like I have, with what I love, computer science. Please support House File 3492 to create a new generation of computer scientists in Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Any further testimony from your...
I think we have a virtual testifier.
Excellent. I believe we have Hannah Weissman, Director of Policy at code.org. If you're able to hear us, please unmute and proceed. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Hannah Weissman, and thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3492. I am the Director of Policy at code.org, which is a national nonprofit working to expand access to K-12 computer science. And at code.org, we've been so lucky to work with many of the great students that you just heard from today and Representative Lee and all the nonprofits and universities across Minnesota who are committed to ensuring that Minnesota is no longer last. We have very much embraced that hashtag, last to first. And as it was mentioned last year, you all in this room that I'm virtually a part of helped pass historic legislation to invest in computer science. And even though it's not even been a year, we've already seen that impact. And in particular, MDE now has a full-time computer science specialist who has been so crucial in this work. However, the work is far from done. As you did hear from the working group, there's considerable investments needed to ensure that we have equitable access to the computer science education landscape. And while this may feel like a daunting task to go from last to first, we do have a rich history in this state. I know I was in front of this committee last year, and we talked a little bit about the Oregon Trail, which always brought smiles to people's faces, so we're going to bring it up again. That game was actually created in Minnesota, and it was created by the Minnesota Education Computing Consortium, which was a consortium created by the very legislature that we are all in today, with the express purpose of bringing computing education to Minnesota schools. And it did that and so much more. It got technology in so many of our schools and actually nationwide, and it showed how technology can be a tool to learn about history and social studies. So we were a leader. We were a leader for almost two decades. But unfortunately, the consortium stopped being funded in the 1990s, and that without that investment, we've really slipped behind. And not only have we stopped investing, our neighbors have started investing. And so that's where we really see this big disparity. And so that gets us to this legislation in front of us today, which focuses on building the capacity of schools to offer computer science through professional development. I'm actually a former teacher myself, and I know how important it is to invest in teachers. Our teachers want the best for our students. They want to ensure that our students have skills to be successful in the 21st century. And to do that, we need to invest in our teachers. We need to give our teachers the skills to impart that upon our students. The advantage of being last, though, is we can look to our neighbors and see what they've done. And so at code.org, because we're a national nonprofit, we have seen the impact of legislation very similar to this across many other states, including our neighbor to the south in Iowa, who has passed similar legislation allocating around $3 million with a number of other policies around computer science. And they now have 84% of their high schools offering computer science, which is more than a 30% increase than 5 years ago. So statewide investment and funding absolutely makes a big difference for student and teacher lives. We also submitted some supporting documents for you all to look further into what other states have done and levels of funding that they've allocated and how that's impacted. And I don't have time to go through all of them, but I really encourage you to look at that. And then lastly, in addition to my role at code.org, I'm also speaking to you as a graduate of St. Paul Public Schools. Actually, Representative Lee and I attended the same high school, though we did not sadly overlap. And actually, similar to our students from Hermantown, it was through my high school that I got the first exposure to computer science. I was lucky enough to attend a high school that offered computer science. And that exposure to computer science is why I'm here today. It gave me the confidence to take more classes in college, which I probably would not have had that confidence had I not had that exposure in high school, and made me a passionate advocate for all students getting that exposure. So every student in Minnesota deserves this access, regardless of their zip code, their socioeconomic status, or their gender, or their race. And this legislation is crucial to making that a reality. So thank you so much for your time and consideration of House File 3492, and I urge you to support this legislation.
Thank you. We have one more testifier that's on remote, and then we'll be able to go to member discussion. I have Cheryl Shahorek from Brooklyn Center Community School Board. If you're able to hear us,
thank
please
you,
unmute and identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House Education Policy Committee. My name is Cheryl Johorek, and I am the board chair for the Brooklyn Center Community Schools School District. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee in support of House File 3492. Brooklyn Center is a first-ring suburb, a culturally diverse district made up of 6% white students and 94% children of color. We know that Minnesota is currently last in the nation in offering foundational computer science courses in our public schools. Schools reaching the most diverse student groups are far less likely to offer computer science. So in order to change this, Brooklyn Center will need the support in planning and implementing computer science education and teacher professional development. However, this can't be isolated to special coursework at the high school level. We must look at computer science as a foundational component of our K-12 academic curriculum and ensure that all of our teachers are confident and prepared to effectively open the world of computer science to all the children we serve. This bill provides funding and oversight for high-quality, coordinated computer science educator training programs. The vast majority of our teachers in our classrooms today did not receive instruction in computer science during their own K-12 education or as part of the teacher education programs. Before teachers can implement computer science instruction, they must be provided with high quality, ongoing professional development and coaching in the content, knowledge, and pedagogy of computer science. This type of professional learning requires funding and time. This bill will provide competitive grant funding and create access to the necessary training and developmental opportunities for our current and future instructional staff. It's important that any new pathways to computer science specific teacher licensure or credentialing created through this process has open access to as many current educators to see themselves as computer science educators rather than create additional barriers to entry. The bill provides funding and oversight for the design and implementation of computer science programs with an emphasis on reaching and supporting these subgroups of students that have been historically underrepresented in the field of computer science. This funding is especially important to small school districts like Brooklyn Center, as it provides the financial resources and the systemic supports necessary for small districts like ours to develop and implement new programming. The inclusion of grant funds like those outlined in the bill for the recruitment and hiring of qualified instructional and support staff is needed to ensure the successful development and implementation of high quality. This is imperative. I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. I believe we have one more in person.
We have, I guess, one public testifier who's not currently in the agenda, but I'm adding her. So.
Thank you. If you would introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Madeline Moore. Thank you for letting me testify. So I am on the Hermantown Robotics team with these boys. I am relatively new. I've only been here for a few months, and I wasn't introduced to anything related to computer science or computer programming until, like, this year is when I actually, you know, got into it. You know, I'd really... I feel a little bit behind, right? So all of these things, building robots and programming robots to do automated tasks, like, you know, using cameras to figure out what they're going to do next, I think that is honestly so cool. And, you know, I really wish I could have been a part of that sooner. If that was introduced sooner as a class, as an option, then I would have been more of where I want to be right now instead of struggling a bit. But
thank you. That's actually really compelling testimony, and actually why we're glad that you all could come down today too, that we understand that kind of we let you all down. That these weren't opportunities that you had when you were younger, and that so that you would be coming now into the high school years really able to advance and excel in this area that you're interested in. So that's what we're trying to fix for the future. I know that I share the committee's gratitude for you being here today and speaking up and telling us your stories from the students' perspective. And now we do have a little time for member discussion and questions, but you know, we do want to vote this on to education finance, where I know that there can be a good, robust discussion of the financial part of it. Members, any comments or questions at this point on this bill? Otherwise, I think we'll let Representative Bennett maybe also, I'm sure you want to speak to our students from Burlington.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to see so many students here. Thank you. Love to hear your thoughts, and we need that. So thank you, and I just want to thank you for bringing the bill forward. I think computer science and coding is incredibly important, and I know we'll have further discussion in Ed Finance. My only concern with this is the annual ongoing funding, being we're going to be looking at a deficit for the next biennium, and no matter how there are so many important things, but we have to be careful. So thank you for the bill. I think it's a very important subject.
Great. Well, see no more discussion. We'll turn to Representative Lee for closing remarks, and then we'll be able to vote on the bill.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank all of the testifiers for doing such a great job and really, you know, just painting the story of why this bill is so important. Obviously, this is also usually a policy year for us, and so I want to acknowledge and be respectful of that. But like I said earlier, you know, this is momentum that we need to keep going. And so, you know, as someone on the tax committee, you know, my hope is because we've been exceeding revenue expectations, we are on track for, you know, a helpful forecast this February. And it's really about paying for the things we care about, right? If there's one thing that you take away from today, it's that we really need foundational support in Minnesota. As you heard, you know, we were ahead of the curve 20 years ago, and, you know, now we've fallen behind. And so that's not helpful because, you know, when you have to backtrack, you have to invest even more. And so I'd just like to close by thanking our students here who will literally be building our future, and thank the colleagues for the discussion. Thank you.
Great. So Representative Lee renews her motion to re-refer House File 3492 as amended to the Committee on Education and Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries, and House File 3492 is on its way to Education and Finance. Thank you. Thank you for being with us today. Great. I think I have, yes, one closing remark. We do not have a committee meeting on Tuesday, and I believe everyone will be home in their districts on precinct caucus night, so we'll see you next Wednesday. With that, our meeting is adjourned.